Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality, Dolores? That is what Film Bookcast, the official podcast on filmbook.com, is dedicated to do today. I'm Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man who's still looking for that maze.
Mike DiCrescia.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. Stuck in a labyrinth in hell, but it's fine.
Yeah, at the end of the day, though, you'll find it was a metaphor all along.
That's right. I heard it wasn't meant for me, but I'm going to keep going.
Keep on trucking. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately, and then after that, we will move on to our featured review, and usually, that's whatever the big wide-release movie is that week. This week, however, there wasn't much in the theater, unless we wanted to review Incarnate, which...
the movie everyone's clamoring to hear about.
That big Oscar contender, Incarnate, is in theaters this week. We chose not to review Incarnate because the season finale of the HBO series Westworld aired this past Sunday. So Mike and I are going to be discussing the entire season of that show, and especially the finale, in detail instead. So that's pretty exciting. Are you excited to talk about Westworld, Mike?
Yeah, we were talking before we started recording. This is one of the shows that I avoided getting involved with all the crazy theory things, so I'm excited to deep dive into whatever that show was.
Yeah, it's a show it's a lot of fun to talk about this show. It's become a very much like a water cooler type show. Right. Like people in my office talk about it all the time. And just going online, like if you're on Twitter for the last 10 months has basically been like Westworld, the website. It's been rough if you don't watch the show live, cause there's been a lot of spoilers all over the place. But so I'm impressed that you were managed to steer clear of that for the most part.
Yeah. Well, I have my, my unsullied, talents. So I managed to avoid it for this.
And those talents include not going on Twitter for a while.
Not reading stuff mostly. Yeah,
so there you go. So we're going to get into Westworld in just a little bit. Before we get into that, let's get into some film news. All right, it's time for film news, and we begin with a story that is weird. I would say a little peculiar. There's not a ton of film news. I'll throw that out there. It's been a quiet couple of weeks, so because of that, I'm reporting on a Pokemon movie rather than something that I actually care about. Rob Letterman, who's the director of Goosebumps, the movie with Jack Black that came out last year, is attached to a live-action Pokemon movie called Detective Pikachu, which is based on one of the Pokemon games, I think only released in Japan so far. I think it's a pretty recent Pokemon game.
Yeah, that's a newer one that I've heard of.
Yeah, so I mean, I was a Pokemon fan when I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were as well, Mike, if that was...
Yeah, definitely in middle school and everything.
Yeah.
Pokemon was definitely my jam.
Yeah, it hit right when I was like 6 or 7 years old and I was all about it. I loved Pokemon, didn't love it as much Digimon, I was that kid.
Oh, man.
But I certainly loved Pokemon as well, and the games for Pokemon I was obsessed with, too. I don't know who this appeals to. I mean, okay, so Pokemon's big, it's still big. Pokemon Go, Pokemon Go just came out last year, or this year, actually, this summer, and it was a massive hit. For a while, I feel like nobody's playing it anymore. But like when it first came out, it was like a phenomenon.
Yeah, it definitely flamed out over the last couple months.
Flamed out like the tail of a Charmander, right?
Wow, wow, and beautiful.
That's when the Charmander dies.
That's right. That's how you kill a Charmander.
That's brutal. That's very dark.
It's the Snyderverse, Mike. We're just living in it.
It's the Pokey Snyderverse.
this is a weird, a live action Pokemon movie, I'm sure it's going to make a bajillion million dollars. So, I guess.
Yeah, 90s kids are going to want to see it. Yeah, today's kids are going to want to see it. But if you're going to do this, like, why not just adapt Pokemon?
You know? why Detective Pikachu?
Why, of all things, Detective Pikachu is what you go with?
Chinatown.
Chinatown. It's just a remake of Chinatown with Pokemon characters.
Yeah.
just do a live action version of like Ash, Misty, and Brock or something, you know, the old cartoon or a new story, but about like a trainer. Like the entire appeal of Pokemon is you're playing a trainer who's trying to collect them all. Detective Pikachu doesn't really seem like it is that.
You know? Yeah, I don't know.
So I guess it's like Pikachu solving a mystery or something. I didn't know Pikachu was that smart. I didn't know that Pikachu had that kind of autonomy. But that said, if this brings to light some kind of hard-boiled noir Pokemon movie...
Yeah, like, I guess I'm in.
I'll watch it. Yeah. You know, it's like, I love noir. It's up my alley. It's going for it. So if there's like some killer Pokemon out on the loose and Pikachu is the only one who can solve it, I want them to go all in on the noir tropes. It should be black and white. There should be a femme fatale. Somebody is dying.
Yeah. And somebody's blackmailing somebody.
Yes.
It's gotta happen.
So that is an interesting thing that's happening. I don't know if this will actually happen.
I know my friend Colin, I know he's listening and he's a huge Pokemon person. So Colin, I want you to let me know what you think about a live action Detective Pikachu movie. You have homework to do. Let me know.
Yeah, you could write in at filmbook.com or what was it? What's our website? What's our email? podcast@filmbook.com to let us know what you think about a live action Pokemon movie. Or you can just tweet at us, which is probably easier.
That works.
At MSmithFilmBlog or at MDFilmBlog. Live action Pokemon. Now, if it's a live action Digimon movie, I'd be over it.
That's a different story.
That is a different story. One day, we'll get there. We'll break through that glass ceiling eventually. This next bit of story, I just wanted to mention this briefly. Kathleen Kennedy, who is basically in charge of all these Star Wars movies from here on out until her contract expires in 2019, and then she'll probably renew it anyway, she's gone on record as saying there will be no sequel to Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Was that a thing people thought was going to happen?
I think some people thought that was going to happen. I think people look at these Star Wars movies and they assume that every spinoff is going to try to launch a franchise. And it would kind of make sense if Disney was trying to do that, but I'd much rather they just do these one-offs. You know, I'm all for no sequel to Rogue One. I think Rogue One will be very good. I'm excited to see Rogue One, but I don't care about what happens next because I already know what happens next.
I think the sequel to Rogue One is A New Hope, right?
That is exactly what director Gareth Edwards said on the subject, actually. So there's that as well. So I do want to mention that briefly because that's been a pretty short week for film news, so we might as well talk about that. And then finally, this last bit, and this is actually really, really cool. Netflix is now offering the ability to download content and watch it offline.
Yeah, that's huge for a lot of people.
That is nuts. This is a game changer. Like, this is something I've been hoping Netflix would do for a long time. Amazon already offers this. If you have Amazon Prime, you can download stuff from their streaming service and watch it on your phone or your iPad or whatever. And now you can do the same thing with Netflix, which is very cool. I don't think it's everything on Netflix. I don't think they offer, like, the entire service.
Right.
But I think most of the Netflix originals are on there.
And, what a surprise.
Yeah. And some of the other stuff as well. But so, yeah, have you tried this out at all, Mike?
No, I actually don't have the Netflix app on my phone or anything like that. Mostly because if I'm somewhere that I'm going to be watching something on Netflix, I have a TV or a laptop with me, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I know this is huge for a lot of people that travel a lot or travel with kids, you know, can give them an iPad or whatever with a... their stuff downloaded in the backseat of the van while you're on your road trip or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's a huge step forward, and I'm glad they're embracing this type of thing. I know people have been asking for it for a long time.
Yeah, it's been great. I started downloading stuff on Netflix. So when I was at the gym earlier today, I was able to watch episodes of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on my phone.
There you go.
And people
at
the gym were looking at me weird because I was laughing very hard.
While you're working out.
Yep. Perfect. So this is really cool. I'm very excited about this. And yeah, Amazon already offers this. So if you have Amazon Prime or Netflix, definitely use this because it's a great service for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that is it for film news, Mike. We went through that pretty quick. Unless you want to talk about Pokemon some more.
I think we're good.
I think
we'll check back in once Colin gets to us.
Gives us a very detailed analysis of the merits of a Pokemon movie. But until we get into those, why don't we discuss some of the stuff that we've watched, Mike? Let's get into our discussions.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies you see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on the Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
So we're back to the regular order of things, where I have one thing that I thought of 10 minutes ago, and you have three movies. So this week I'd like to discuss another podcast. It's called The Adventure Zone. And as I mentioned at the end of every episode, I'm a big D&D person.
Right.
So I seek out other means of consuming Dungeons & Dragons because it's all-consuming hobby.
Right.
So this is a podcast with brothers Griffin, Justin, Travis, McElroy, and their father, Clint. They also have another podcast called My Brother, My Brother and Me, which is a comedy podcast where they hang out and just talk about stuff and do improv skits and whatever. But one episode, they decided to play Dungeons & Dragons as a special event, and they liked it so much, they spun off its own podcast. And I think it's a lot of fun because the first episode is, I think they do it bi-weekly, is around 50-something episodes at this point. And the first episode is them literally opening the starter pack for 5th edition and trying to figure out how to play D&D. So if you're new to the game or if it's something you're interested in, it's a good place to jump in. Because they're just as lost as you are. And they're really funny people, and, you know, they're brothers and their father, so they have a great repertoire together. Or rapport, excuse me. They have great rapport together. I got it.
You got it. Yeah.
I fixed it. So they're brothers and a dad, so they have great rapport together. So it's a lot of fun to listen to them, and they're very silly, and they're having tons of fun. So it's something people I think should check out if you're at all interested, but you don't, like, you know, I've mentioned Critical Role before on the episode, on the podcast, and that at this point I think has like 300 something hours of content to watch.
It's right, insane. So it's a little tough for newcomers to come in.
Yeah, it's basically pretty daunting. And the Adventure Zone episodes are around an hour and 15 minutes each.
Okay,
so it's a little more manageable to listen to on your commute to work or something like that. Okay. Instead of Critical Role, which is like 3 or 4 hours an episode. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. Always trying to preach the good word of Dungeons and Dragons.
Very cool, very cool. So that is The Adventure Zone. It's available on iTunes, I guess, and Stitcher and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's wherever podcasts are available.
Okay, cool. So that's The Adventure Zone. And then I have 3 movies to talk about this week. The first movie that I want to talk about is Moana, which is the new Disney animated film from directors Ron Clements and John Musker. They were the guys who directed such Disney classics as The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and Hercules. Very strong track record for these guys. And it's about an island chief's daughter who goes on a journey with a demigod to help restore her island back to health. This movie stars Ala'i Cravalho as Moana and The Rock as the demigod Maui, and it features music by my favorite guy in the world, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, you guys are tight now, right?
Yeah, we're best buds. I saw him at the Weird Al show, and we locked eyes, and now we're best friends.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That is how it works. This is a very fun movie. It's sort of a thin story, and Moana, I think, is sort of a static character. Her arc is basically she sets out to do the thing, and then she does the thing. Like she's a really strong character. She doesn't like change at all throughout the movie. Like there's no like point A to point B in her like character in her character, I would say. But the movie's visually dynamic. The songs are great. The Rock is having a blast. Just as Maui, I think he's doing some of his best work here. And there are at least 2 set pieces in this movie that are tremendous. One of which is directly influenced by Mad Max Fury Road,
and it's awesome. I'm in.
So if you're a fan of Disney movies, Moana is definitely up your alley. If you're a fan of just animated movies in general, I think Moana is a really strong one. I don't think it's the best animated movie of the year. Kubo is hands down. But Moana is very, very good. So definitely check that out if you can. And then I also wanted to talk about Allied, which is the new film from director Robert Zemeckis, starring Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. And I'm a big fan of Robert Zemeckis. You know, Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, Castaway. He disappeared for about a decade making crappy animated movies, but now he's back.
He got that out of his system.
He got that weird mocap out of his system, and now he's you know, doing some really strong work. I loved Flight and I loved The Walk, so I was pretty excited about Allied. This is a movie about 2 spies in World War II who meet up for a mission in Casablanca and then fall in love, but as it turns out, one of them may actually be a spy working for the Germans.
Ooh,
intrigue. So this, I don't think this is as strong as Zemeckis' recent work like Flight and The Walk, but it's a pretty breezy time. It has some great sequences. It also has like this very old Hollywood style, I would say. There's a lot of scenes that simply kind of rely on pure star power, charisma to carry the movie. And it generally works. I really enjoyed watching this movie. Brad Pitt, Marion Cotillard are great in it. And just a fun, like breezy time. Also, I do want to mention this. The card game Nazi from Inglourious Basterds, the guy who has the King Kong on his forehead, he also plays a Nazi in this movie.
That's amazing.
And it threw me off for a while because I knew I recognized him, but I wasn't sure from what. And so I was watching it, and I was thinking, like my thought process was like, I saw that guy on screen, and I was like, hey, I think I've seen this Nazi before. And then, like a minute later, I was like, wait, I think I've seen this guy play a Nazi before.
That's amazing.
And then I thought, wait, I think I've seen this guy play a Nazi in the movie with Brad Pitt before.
Yes.
It was like this whole process that went through my head. So that was pretty cool. Also, like Jared Harris in this movie from Mad Men, and Lizzie Kaplan is also in this movie as well. It's a very fun time. I think if you like spy movies, if you like just like old Hollywood kind of World War II movies, it's a very enjoyable time. That definitely has shades of Casablanca as well, because I mean, part of the movie takes place there,
right.
And it actually takes place in Casablanca in 1942, which is when the movie was made. So it definitely feels like a direct reference. But in any case, that's Allied, and I also wanted to talk about another movie called Hunt for the Wilder People, which is the new movie from Takeaway Titi, a guy who I've come to like more and more over the past year or so. I loved What We Do in the Shadows, which is the movie he directed last year. I went back and watched his previous movie, Boy, which is also very good. And that he's the one directing Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
And he had directed that Team Thor short, which was phenomenal to promote that movie. So I'm all in on this guy. He really makes me laugh. This movie stars Sam Neill and Julian Dennison, and it's about a man and his unwanted foster kid who run off into the woods of New Zealand and set off a nationwide manhunt. This movie is a blast. It is incredibly funny. It's very moving. Sam Neill is in, like, full I-hate-kids mode from Jurassic Park.
Right.
And the kid, Julian Dennison, is terrific. It balances a lot of comedic and dramatic beats very well. Unlike Boy, which started out as a comedy and then became like a drama halfway through, this movie kind of straddles the line. It's definitely really funny throughout, but it has like, you know, dramatic moments kind of peppered in that don't offset the comedy. The comedy is very much present. It just has like a ton of heart, and I'm still cracking up over like throwaway lines in this movie. There's one like exchange between the boy and the person in charge of the child care services where they're arguing about who's the Terminator and who's Sarah Connor, and it's great.
That's amazing.
I've been thinking about it. Like, I watched this movie yesterday. I've been thinking about it all day. So that's Hunt for the Wilder People, probably my favorite out of the movies that I'm talking about today. And Moana and Allied, and your thing was The Adventure Zone. All worthy discussions in our discussion segments of film book.
Thanks, Mike.
Yes.
Thanks for validating.
All right, so that about does it for our discussions, Mike. Are you ready to jump into the world of Westworld?
I am. I'm ready to question reality.
All right, let's do it. Let's get into our featured review of Westworld Season 1, starting right now.
He came back.
You know, if I could stay right here with you, I would.
Just sometimes I feel like the world out there is calling me.
You're one of them, aren't you? You're not real.
Bring yourself back online.
Do you know where you are?
I'm in a dream.
You're in my dream. I designed every part of this place. It's not a theme park, but an entire world.
You and everyone you know were built to gratify the desires of the people who pay to visit your world.
Just don't forget, they're not real.
All right, that was from one of the trailers for Westworld, the new TV series created by Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, based on the 1973 movie Westworld, written and directed by Michael Crichton. The series stars Evan Rachel Wood, Danny Newton, Jeffrey Wright, James Marsden, Ben Barnes, Ingrid Bolso-Bardal, Clifton Collins Jr., Luke Hemsworth, Sidsey Babbitt-Knudsen, Simon Quarterman, Rodrigo Santoro, Angela Serafian, Jimmy Simpson, Tessa Thompson, Shannon Woodward, Ed Harris, and Anthony Hopkins. That was a lot of names.
That is.
That was just the people who listed as main cast. I didn't list any recurring or anything, because, like, fuck that. The IMDb plot synopsis for Westworld reads, Westworld isn't your typical amusement park. Intended for rich vacationers, this futuristic park, which is looked after by robotic hosts, quote-unquote, allows its visitors to live out their fantasies through artificial consciousness. No matter how illicit the fantasy may be, there are no consequences for the park's guest, allowing for any wish to be indulged. There's a lot of intrigue in that synopsis.
There is.
I liked that. That was actually, I went to IMDb, and there was two synopsises, And the first one was just like a new TV show based on the movie about a futuristic theme park. And then I scrolled down a little more and I was like, oh, this one actually describes what the show's about. So that's, I'll go okay. with that one.
Good choice, Mike.
Yeah. So I have not seen the original movie Westworld. Have you seen Westworld, Mike?
No, I haven't.
The 73 movie? Okay, neither have I. Nor have I seen Jonathan Nolan's previous TV series, Person of Interest. I have, however, seen all of his brother Christopher Nolan's movies, many of which are written or co-written by Jonathan Nolan, including The Prestige, The Dark Knight, and Interstellar. He also wrote the short story that Memento was based on. Lisa Joy was a writer on Pushing Daisies and Burn Notice, and she's been married to Jonathan Nolan for a long time, actually. So I think part of what's really interesting to the show, about, for me at least, is the fan engagement has been really interesting to watch. Like, I'm not a big fan theory guy.
Right.
I generally don't look at a TV show or movie as something that I have to, like, solve, you know?
Okay.
But in most cases, you know, in most cases, I like to let the narrative come and, like, judge it by its own merits. That is decidedly not how people interacted with the show. Everyone who was watching it seemed like they were posting theories and spoilers, and it became a pretty quick phenomenon, and I think a pretty sizable hit for HBO. I would say, aside from like Stranger Things, it's probably the biggest new TV show of 2016.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, like Twitter has been, like we were talking about before, it's been insane. It's been a minefield of spoilers and fan theories, and like if you're not watching Westworld, I can only imagine what Twitter must be like.
For on you. Sunday nights.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be rough. It's got to be like if you're not watching Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
Like nothing would make sense to you if you're on Twitter. You know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, though. That's a good point that you brought up, the phenomenon of the fan theories and all of that. I mean, that goes on with a lot of shows, especially HBO shows, like Game of Thrones and Leftovers and all those things. But particularly with Westworld, the premise, revolves around solving a maze. Like, it's deliberately about a puzzle, and the show is itself a puzzle, and fans are all over it, and they want to figure out what this is.
Yeah, that's the thing. The show seems to invite the fan theories,
right?
As opposed to like Game of Thrones, which isn't like you're not necessarily trying to solve,
right? Exactly.
You know, something. So like, there were fan theories about Game of Thrones, like, you know, who are Jon Snow's real parents, and like the show eventually answered that question, but it was exactly what the fans said. Theorized. But it's, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones isn't trying to hide that from you,
right?
Whereas Westworld is trying to make it like a reveal, and fans are going like, I know what's happening here, I can read details in the background of scenes,
because
I've watched it 5 times in the past day or so. People got obsessed, people got really into Westworld. And I was in from minute one. I thought the pilot of the show was fantastic. I mean, and it was like a very simple introduction to this very complex world. You know, narratively, I thought the first episode of the show was pretty straightforward. And then from there, it gets a lot more complicated. As it goes on. And I thought episode two was even better. It kind of emphasized the video game-like nature of this park. And Jonathan Nolan has actually cited a few video games as inspiration for this show, including Bioshock Infinite, Red Dead Redemption, and Skyrim.
All of those make sense.
I think specifically like Bioshock Infinite in terms of aesthetic, like the sci-fi parts, Red Dead Redemption in terms of the Western parts, and Skyrim in terms of just the insane openness of Westworld, you know?
Yeah, especially with... have you beaten Bioshock Infinite?
Yes.
Okay, especially the ending, the theme of the whole game.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of that comes into play, and we'll get to a lot of that in spoilers as well.
Yeah.
More than anything, I think Westworld's about how we engage in storytelling. You know, and that's why it's so interesting to see how fans are engaging with the show online. Like, you're doing the thing that the show says you're going to do.
It very much is at the same time a condemnation of that, and it openly invites it. It's very interesting. And the show is dealing with so many huge questions on top of that commentary about video gamers and people, you know, and how people interact with media now.
Right.
It's dealing with questions of consciousness and when does it begin? What does it mean? And it's so good. And it's interesting. It's exciting to have a show that does not care if you're along for the ride, in a sense. Like, it's going to do what it's going to do, and it's not going to stop and be like, okay, turn to the camera and explain that high concept to the people.
Right.
We're just going to plow straight ahead, and it's exciting to see that kind of thing.
Yeah, it trusts its audience enough to let the viewers kind of just follow along. So, I mean, this 10-episode season where you were engaged, you felt like it all came together in a satisfying way?
Yes, almost. I think it the finale I have one gripe with a tiny bit, but I guess I could save that for spoilers.
Okay.
But for the most part, I was engaged all the way through. There was a few episodes towards the middle that I was, or like, I think episodes like 3 or 4, where I felt like we hadn't, like the show hadn't quote unquote started.
Okay.
Like we hadn't gotten to whatever the conflict was going to be yet. I can't remember the exact moment, but I think it might have been in episode 5. But from then on, I was like, yep, we're in.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting you say that around like episode 3 or 4, because the show was in development for a really long time. Like HBO, I think, announced that Jonathan Nolan's attached to this in like 2013. And it's been like significantly reworked over that period of time. This was supposed to premiere last year in 2015. And the pilot episode was shot all the way back in August 2014. Wow. So it's that first episode was shot over 2 years ago. Yeah. And I think you can tell as the show's focus kind of begins to shift about halfway through the season, I would say.
Right.
From episode 1, Dolores is like positioned as the central character. But I would say around episode 4 or 5, Maeve's story becomes like equally, if not more important, at least for like a while up until the finale. And so I think it's interesting that you mentioned like around 3 or 4, you feel like the show was like hadn't really like found itself yet, or was still like hadn't really started yet. And I feel like that was around the time where they kind of like scaled back and was like, okay, what are we actually doing here?
Yeah, it definitely feels like we're doing. Man, I wish I had remembered when stuff happens, but I think it's when Maeve's plotline becomes the focus and she digs the bullet out of herself and like she starts to remember stuff.
Right.
That's when I was like, oh, we're in it now.
Yeah.
And but before that, it was kind of just like a meandering thing a little bit. So yeah, I agree. I guess that's the point when the show started firing on all cylinders for me. Right.
Yeah, I would say so too. And the ensemble cast of the show is tremendous. I mean, Evan Rachel Wood and Thandie Newton, both did incredible work as Dolores and Maeve. I think Evan Rachel Wood's going to win an Emmy this year. Like every bit character too works really well. I remember the actor who played her dad in the first episode gave this incredible performance when he's like breaking down over the picture that he's looking at, where he's like kind of understanding that, like, he's sort of understanding that he's not real, but at the same time he's like questioning his reality, and it's like there's so many layers to that performance, it's like insane. And that's just like one a guy who's in one episode,
you know? Yeah, I wanted him to come back so bad because he's awesome in that episode.
Yeah. And then other than that, I mean, Jeffrey Wright as Bernard, I think, gives a very layered performance as the series goes on. Anthony Hopkins gets to do his evil monologue thing every episode, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Shannon Woodward, Jimmy Simpson, Simon Quarterman, they're all highlights as well. Visually, I think the show is tremendous. You know, it kind of blends sci-fi and Western elements very seamlessly. And it's never like jarring or disjointed. It never felt like, oh, and now it's a Western, and now it's a sci-fi. Like, it always, they both feel like part of the same world.
Yeah, no, I agree. My favorite, just one of my favorite weird quirks is how when they're in the West world, or the company basement, like when they're in the labs and all that stuff.
Right.
How, like, it almost seems like all these glass walls actually give them privacy. you can see everything, but no one acts like you can see anything.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just true. A weird thing I noticed at the end.
That's true. Yeah, so there's that. And all these episodes were shot on 35mm film. Yeah, and I think they were very well directed all around. Jonathan Nolan himself directed the premiere and the finale. Also, directors Vincenzo Natali, Neil Marshall, and Michelle McLaren all ended up directing parts of the show as well. So a lot of talented people working on the show, which is very cool. And I just think the puzzle-like nature of its narrative was just, like, fascinating to watch unfold. And I think it's a show that would very much benefit from rewatching it. You know, I only watched it the one time. I think you did as well, right?
Yeah, I have only watched them once.
Yeah.
But this is definitely, you see the season finale, and now you need to go back and watch it again, knowing the reveal.
Yes. There are lots of reveals in the show that change your entire perception of the show. And it happens, like, more than once.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is part of the theme of the show, is that, you know, you accept reality at face value. You never know anything. You get this one bit of information that completely changes your perception, and now you need to go back and revisit your memories from this other point of view.
Yeah, Yeah, it's an incredibly like detailed experience too. It seems like it's very rewarding to the viewer, and presumably it's why everyone on the internet went nuts for it.
Right, and
the show is often confusing, I would say,
yes.
And it's not always clear what's going on. But I like you said before, like I'm always along for the ride, you know. And things do tend to click in place after a while. The show like slowly begins to like reveal itself and like what it's trying to do. But there are bits where it's like, okay, and I don't know what's happening here, and here we go.
Yeah.
Move on to the next plot line, see if I can follow this. Nope. All right, here we go.
Try a third time's charm.
If you're not into that, like if you're not into like letting the show kind of wash over you and like trying to figure out what's going on, then I could see the show not being for you. But I think for people who are into kind of trying to solve this puzzle, it is really interesting. And I would say Jonathan Nolan's writing in general is kind of criticized, not just for the show, but in general, for being more about themes than they are about character, and for being kind of emotionally distant and for being more complex than they need to be. And
none of those things seem appropriate for the show.
I get where those criticisms come from, you know, but honestly, I really like that style. I really like his writing for these those Nolan movies and the show. There's something very engaging to me in something like The Dark Knight, where Batman and Joker kind of discuss the duality of their personalities. Likewise, like that shit is all over Westworld.
It's the whole show.
It's the entire
10 hours of that.
Yeah, and I thought it really enhanced the show rather than detracted from it. So I would say the point is Westworld is just great sci-fi. In general, like it's building upon and updating concept to comment on modern society in an engaging way. Supposedly, season 2 is not going to premiere until 2018, which is upsetting. For sure.
Yeah.
It makes sense since this was such a huge undertaking the first time around. Like it took them so long to get season 1 off the ground.
Right.
But it's going to be a tough wait. I'm kind of upset about it, and I'm upset we're entering the realm of prestige TV taking long breaks. You know, like Fargo season 3 has been. We've been waiting on that for a while. Rick and Morty season 3, I've been waiting on that for a while. I'm gonna count that under the banner of prestige TV.
I would agree.
You know, and Game of Thrones is also going to be a long, like season 7 is going to be much later on, like probably like fall of next year or something.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense though. Our television is approaching film quality in terms of story, and it may have surpassed it in some aspects. Movies take a long ass time to make.
Yeah, that's true. I think,
and now they're making a 10-hour movie because it's a 10-hour, you know, 10-episode season.
Yeah, it's kind of moving towards more of a British model of TV, where it's shorter seasons and it takes longer to get them, but they're usually better. Like it's a better product.
I'd rather have that.
Yeah. So that's cool. But anyway, anything else you want to say about Westworld before we move into spoilers? Mike, we'll talk about some of the big twists.
No, I don't think so. I think we could go straight into spoilers.
All right, let's do that. Let's get into spoilers for Westworld starting right now. And actually, it's funny because it's a Game of Thrones spoiler clip that I usually play. So it's a spoiler clip for a different HBO show. Let's get into spoilers for Westworld starting right now. Let's get into spoilers for Westworld starting right now. So of the many surprise twists the show had to offer, the most shocking for me was the reveal that Bernard was a host the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And that occurs at the end of episode 7, Trompe l'Oeil, I think is the name of that episode. And I figured something like that would happen at some point to a human character. Like, it just seemed like somebody's asking me about my fan theories, and I was like, they're all robots. Every single one of them is a robot. And I was joking, but at the same time, it seems like it seems like too easy a twist not to do. Like, seems like a very, like it just seems like a narratively justified thing. And in retrospect, it makes total sense that it was Bernard, as he's the one who interacts with the host the most. You could say he's the host with the most. The one with the most hosts.
You're not wrong.
But the way it was handled, you know, when Teresa finds the Bernard blueprint and he says, it doesn't look like anything to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is what the hosts say when something that would disrupt their programming, when they see something like that. Right. That was a big, like, gasp moment. Like, I, like, audibly gasped. and then following that up with Ford ordering Bernard to kill Teresa. Just brutal. Man, that was intense. Especially like those two characters had a very emotional connection. They were sleeping together for a while, and so you know, Teresa's entire worldview changed in the matter of seconds, and so did Bernard's. And you know,
right.
just so much going on in like a short 5-minute scene.
yeah. for all those characters. Which I feel like describes so much of this show.
Yes.
It's just like one scene of dialogue and everything changes.
Yeah. Pretty much. And then following up on that Bernard twist, there was another Bernard twist in episode 9.
It got twistier.
It got even twistier. Episode 9, called The Well-Tempered Clavier, in which we discover that Bernard was based on Arnold, the co-founder of the park, alongside Ford, and that every time we've seen Dolores talking to Bernard over the season, she was actually talking to Arnold.
Yeah.
Which means that the show has been operating with several different timelines. In regards to Dolores' story, and that sets up the next twist, which is part of, I think it's part of the great thing about the show, is that every twist lines up with the next twist, pretty much. Like everything,
yeah.
Every twist sets up the next thing, and you know, it's not just twist for the sake of twist. They're actually progressing the story
exactly.
in an interesting way. And so, by the time you get to the end of the show, you've been twisted around like four or five times.
Yeah, and those are all massive, like, perspective changing.
Yeah, if you go back and watch, you know, episode 1 of the show, it's gonna play entirely differently than it will have the first time you watched it, and that's I think really interesting and very good, and that's exactly what a twist ending should do. There are twist endings to movies and stuff that just have no bearing on anything that happens
right.
in the movie. It, like, that happens. So I prefer when it's a twist, like. I would say the twist ending of The Usual Suspects. Have you seen The Usual Suspects?
Yes.
Okay. I like The Usual Suspects. I think it's a solid movie. I do think that twist ending doesn't really do much for me because, like, Kaiser Soze, like, the twist ending of The Usual Suspects, spoilers, is that Kevin Spacey, who is telling the story the entire time to the two cops, turns out to be Kaiser Soze, who is the criminal they were looking for.
Right.
Right. And he's just, and it turned out the entire movie was just made up. And he was just, like, picking up, like, random, like, looking at things in the room and saying, like, oh, and then this happened, and this, like,
yeah,
right? And I guess it changes your entire perception of that movie because it turns out nothing in the movie happened. But then it's like, well, why did I watch the movie? You know?
Right, yeah.
And so that's not really the case with Westworld. Westworld, like, everything in this show changes what you thought happened early on, and it changes like your entire perception, and everything you thought you knew is not what you knew,
right.
And so it makes you want to go back and watch it and like look at it from a new perspective. It's not like everything was a lie,
but like almost. But
yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that next twist that alternate timelines thing set up, or the multiple timelines that's set up, it is revealed in the finale, and this was called by fans as early as episode 3 or 4. Jimmy Simpson's character, William, who was on an adventure with Dolores throughout the season, is actually a young version of Ed Harris's character, the Man in Black. And we've been watching them in different timelines this whole time. Like, whoa! And I had heard this fan theory about this, so I wasn't that shocked about this, but the twist was incredibly well done.
Yeah.
The Man in Black's reveal to Dolores that he is William, with flashback William putting on the black hat and then cutting back to the Man in Black, who's in the same pose. Yep. Just incredibly well directed and edited, just great sequence. Did you know about this? Was like the most common theory floating around. You didn't know anything about this?
No, yeah, like I had mentioned earlier, I managed to avoid or consciously chose not to engage in reading all the articles and getting lost in the fan theories, which normally I probably would have, but for some reason I just decided not to for this show. So there's a couple like telegraphs that it's coming. I realized one of them after the fact, obviously. There's the woman, the blonde host that greets Bill, William when right. he gets off the train. And then he sees her again, or Man in Black sees her and is like, oh, they reused you or something like that, or you're still around.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever. when that happened, but then thinking back on it, it's like, oh, of course, he remembers her. But yeah, that was one of those things that, again, fundamentally changes how you view the show, of what those timelines mean and what that character progression now means. But it's one of those shows where I probably would have had a lot of fun engaging in the fan theories, and I probably will as they progress, as the show goes on. Mm. But I, for some reason, I don't know what drove me to it for this season, where I was like, you know what, I just want to be lost and have no idea what's going on and then have my mind blown.
Yeah, fair enough. And it worked out.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Maeve's story this season I thought was probably the highlight of the show for me. That was the most engaging and the most exciting stuff. And her story is that she is a host who has started regaining her memories and is now able to manipulate the system. resulting in some of the show's best sequences, I thought. And that all comes to a head in the finale, where she tries to break out with Hector and Armistice, and it turns into a super violent action movie for a little while.
Yeah.
And we also get an indication that Westworld may not be the only area in the park.
I guess we got to talk about that eventually, too.
I think we got to talk about that now. During their escape, they stumble upon a room filled with samurai hosts.
Yeah.
Like, what?
That just seems so fucking hokey to me. Like, it seems like it's a cool thought that, of course.
Okay, this is the thing that you're not a fan of?
No, I didn't think of that, actually.
Okay.
Like, of course they would have other parks. What I'm afraid of happening is, like, season two, we're in Samurai World. Like, that just seems... If they go that route, I'll be so disappointed. I don't think they will. But, like, it was a cool, like, thought. Like, of course they have other parks with other themes and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see those. But I got real nervous all of a sudden when I saw that. It was like, no, please no.
Man, I had the opposite. I was all in on Samurai World. yeah, I mean, there's an SW logo, so I think it is either Samurai, like, Jonathan Nolan says it's not Samurai World, but he won't say what it is. I guess Shogun World, maybe, but...
possible.
But I think it's going to be Samurai World. I do think the show will eventually explore other parks, because that's part of the movie as well, from what I understand. Like, there is, like, other parks that are in the movie, like there's, like, a future world and stuff like that. So I could see, like Samurai World popping up. I would be all in on Samurai World coming up. As soon as I saw that room and there was like a bunch of samurai, I was like, yes, here we go.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm afraid of if they go and explore those things is that it's just the same stuff. Like, just with literally a different skin on it. Like, it doesn't make any sense to jump to this other park where we're just going to explore themes of consciousness again. Like, so, but that's what I'm afraid of a lesser show would do. So I'm nervous for that.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Of course, and the finale, let's get back to Maeve for a minute. The finale also makes clear that Maeve's desire to leave the park is also part of her programming.
Right.
So even then, it's like, you know, we see this character gaining consciousness and, like, remembering and, like, understanding what she is. And then even then, she's still being controlled.
Yep. Even then, she's not really conscious, maybe.
Yeah. And she still doesn't acknowledge it, is the thing.
Yeah.
She, like, keeps going with her plan.
I was going to say that could just be another sign of consciousness that she refuses to accept that.
Maybe. Or else it's like part of her programming that she's not going to accept it. You know, it's in the same way that when a host sees a picture of themselves, they're like, that doesn't look like anything to me.
Right.
This could be the same deal. So is that something that Ford did? It seemed like that would be some, like, his thing or somebody else. Like, who knows?
It seemed like Ford to me, the way the rest of the finale goes.
It would probably be Ford, yeah. And speaking of Ford, his death, as a note to end the season on, is, I think, a very strong one. The theme of the season to me seems to be control, right? Like, Ford represents control throughout the season. He's a man playing God in a world that he created. Arnold like sympathized with the host and felt like they shouldn't be exploited. As it turns out, in the end, Ford was on the side of the hosts all along.
Right.
And that his season-long effort to craft a new narrative was, in fact, to get the hosts out of the humans' control. And to that end, he programs Dolores to shoot him in the back of the head before opening fire on the board.
He enacts the correct version of Arnold's plan, where he had them kill all the hosts, which they could just rebuild. Ford has them kill the humans, which can't come back.
Exactly. So if season one's theme was control, I think season two looks like it's going to be chaos. You know, the exact opposite. And that's really exciting to me. Now, like, we've seen how this park operates and we've seen how it works, and I think season two can blow up the entire concept and just go fucking nuts with it. And that's kind of what made me really excited about Samurai World, was that, like, you know, imagine the chaos that would happen if, like, somebody from Westworld showed up in Samurai World, you know?
Right.
Like, if Dolores ended up in Samurai World or in whatever other world that they have in store, could be really interesting. I'm curious about the machinations of the other parks, if those exist, because, like, just the process of, like, keeping Westworld running seems like it's such a huge operation.
Yeah. I like that there's this theme where they go to the lower levels, which is the original stuff. And, like, I like the thought that they just were like, nah, and just built another floor. And, like, oh, that one didn't work. We'll build another floor. I mean, I guess it makes sense. That's what, you know, learning, building on top of your previous mistakes and all that stuff. But like, literally, there's just an abandoned office building. Like, they just keep adding floors onto.
Yeah. I think the way the show like blends sci-fi concepts together are really fun. I think one of my favorite sequences in the show, I think it's like episode 5 or 6. The Man in Black is on like some kind of like side mission. And he gets like stuck, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, just to jump in, Man in Black is definitely the gamer character.
Yeah, the dick gamer character.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Part of his progression is that he starts out as like the gamer who tries to do things right, the guy who plays the guy like me who plays the game correctly.
He goes for the Paragon run, ends up as a rogue.
Yep, he's the guy who plays Infamous on the good setting,
right?
You know, plays Infamous on the moral setting, and then, you know, his friend Logan is the guy who plays Infamous on the evil setting.
Exactly.
Over the course of the show, you know, the reveal that William turns into the Man in Black, like, you see William kind of finding himself in the world of Westworld, kind of getting into his inner evilness and into his more baser human instincts, and becoming the guy who just shoots people in Grand Theft Auto for no reason, you know?
Right, exactly. Like,
but one of my favorite parts of the show is I think it was in episode 5 or 6, the Man in Black is on like the side mission, and he's in like he's stuck in a prison cell,
right?
And he sets off like a stick of dynamite, but in order to do it, he like, you know, he does the dynamite thing and he hits the button or whatever. And then it cuts back to the control room, and it says, like, oh, guest is asking to activate this, like, dynamite fuse or whatever. And so you see the entire, like, control room operation just to get, like, this one thing in this one part of the park for this one guest happening. And I think that's a really interesting part, because it's, like, I don't know how many guests there are in Westworld. I feel like it's got to be at least a few. It's a huge world.
Right? Yeah, I forgot about that sequence, and I wonder how much of that is because of who he is in terms of the like, he owns the company,
right?
Like, yeah, as later reveal,
he has like a controlling stake in the company.
Yeah So I wonder if they give him that specific support because of who he is.
That's like, possible.
Like, I don't know, but yeah, that I definitely had that thought also, was like, it's like very Hunger Gamesy, just from that, you know, we go to the control room where they can literally just change the environment, like, right from there. But yeah, that was a really awesome sequence to see, you know, the like you said, the inner machinations of how this catastrophe of a park runs.
Yeah, man, Michael Crichton with his theme parks. I gotta tell you,
I mean, he does do it, I guess,
you know, he does. And I would say one of the most enjoyable characters in the show was Shannon Woodward's character Elsie, who disappears at the end of episode 6. And it's later implied that Bernard did something to her, but it's never really made clear that she's dead.
Right.
And I think she's going to return in season 2. I feel like she's got to she's got to come back at some point. You know,
I feel like she may play a key role in Ford's new narrative.
That's quite possible. It seems like she, like, I think at this point she knows that Bernard is the host. So I feel like that's going to, like, the fact that she's the only one who knows now is going to play a pretty significant part of that as well.
Felix knows.
Oh yeah, Felix does know. That was actually one of my favorite moments of the finale, now that you're mentioning it, when Felix Felix is with Maeve, and she talks to Bernard as if he's a host, and Felix is like, wait, Bernard's not a host, and he looks at his own hands and is like, you're not a host. Like,
yeah. I did love how salty Maeve becomes. And she's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like,
yes, that was great. I thought, Felix, man, I got to tell you, I feel like at some point he was just rooting for the robots to win, right? Like,
yeah, he just has some Stockholm syndrome going on there.
Actively destroying humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole subplot of those guys, I forget what the other dude's name is.
The guy with the beard.
Yeah, yeah. It was so much fun to watch them just, like, bumble through whatever Maeve was trying to do.
Yes. It was great. Yeah, that was pretty great. That whole Maeve subplot I thought was fantastic. Yeah. And we also don't know what happened to Luke Hemsworth's character Ashley, who went into the park to investigate something suspicious. He's the security guard.
I forgot that even happened.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's so much going on in the show, it's easy to forget certain stuff. And like episode 9, he goes into the park to investigate something suspicious, and then he gets ambushed by what Wikipedia tells me are Ghost Nation warriors, which yes. I vaguely remember them from elsewhere in the show.
Yeah, they're most notably the William plot on the train. They
right.
go through.
Okay, yes.
They go through the Ghost Nation territory, and that's like where they're the big threat.
Okay, so but it's not really clear what happens to Luke Hemsworth character on the show. So I guess we'll find out what happens in season 2.
Yeah,
so that's like a dangling thread as well as the LC thing. Did you see the post credit scene of the finale?
Yes, and I was okay. very confused by it.
So was I, because the credits started rolling, and I was like, all right, that's a great ending. The credits started rolling, I'm like going to go on Twitter and stuff, and then something started playing after the credits, and I assumed, because I was watching it on demand, that it was one of the HBO, like, inside the episode looks or something, because they do that.
Yeah.
And then I kind of looked up, and I was like, this doesn't look familiar, and I was like, oh, shit, and I had to rewind it to see what was going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the post-credits scene, Armistice, who in the big breakout with Maeve, she's one of the hosts, she gets her arm stuck in a door and tells them to go on without her. So the post-credit scene shows Armistice chopping her arm off after getting stuck in the door, and then shooting a dude, and then escaping, it looks like.
Maybe? Like, it just ends with her grinning at the guy. So that was part of my complaint, sort of, for the finale, is that it ends in the middle of a scene, basically. Like, nothing is resolved in that final in the scene, I don't think.
I've had to think a lot about finale cliffhangers lately, because I was very pissed off with The Walking Dead last season.
Right.
As were several people. And I thought this was a great cliffhanger.
That's fair. It is either the beginning of the new narrative. Like, we get to see it in this season. I don't think it detracts from the show in any way. But it definitely felt like nothing is tied up, I guess. Like, Maeve gets off the train, and then the lights turn out, go off.
Right.
They're still in the middle of shooting everyone at the gala. Like, we don't know what happened to the man in black. We don't know what happened to anybody.
Right.
But so it was one of those, that was one of the, like, oh, but, like, no, give me just, like, 4 more minutes. Like,
I don't know. To me, like, the most of the stories kind of felt like they were at, like, not necessarily an ending point, but, like, an end for this chapter of the story.
That's
kind of what I liked about it. Like, the ending on Ford's death, I thought was a very powerful ending for the season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the next season will obviously pick up right where that left off, I assume.
Right. In 2 years.
In 2 years or whatever happens, yeah. And so that to me works really well. It's not like The Walking Dead where, you know, the big cliffhanger ending of The Walking Dead was like, who's going to die? And it's like, well, that's not satisfying because...
Right.
That you're robbing us of the end of this story. You know, it's not...
Yeah, that's a good point.
The cliffhanger should be the end of one story and the beginning of another. And I think I think Westworld mostly succeeds in that regard. And so I very much like that. And, I mean, just, like, watching Westworld in tandem with this current Walking Dead season has only risen Westworld, in my estimation.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's even, like, coming... It's actually, like, a decent Walking Dead season, but it's still The Walking Dead, so, you know...
Shots fired.
Boom. So yeah, Westworld, better than The Walking Dead.
that ringing endorsement.
But also, like, a really interesting examination of consciousness and about storytelling and just so many things. I really loved it. Just great. It's a great sci-fi show. I am eagerly anticipating season 2 whenever that happens. Hopefully in 2018. But yeah, I mean, Jeffrey Wright has said definitely not 2017. So we'll see.
Fair enough.
We'll see what happens. But maybe. You know, this was a pretty big hit, so maybe HBO will fast-track season 2, try to make it happen as soon as possible.
I'm sure they will. This was a massive... This was a bigger hit than I thought it was going to be.
This was the hit HBO needed, really, because they... Yeah. You know, Game of Thrones is ending, you know, and they need something to kind of take over, and nothing has really, like, been that replacement show. You know, True Detective was almost that show. Season 1 was a big hit, and then season 2, everybody bailed because it was terrible. And, you know, they don't really have, like, the big prestige drama show... to replace Game of Thrones. And Westworld looks like it could be that show. So that's very exciting. So that's pretty cool. So any final thoughts on Westworld, Mike, before we wrap up today?
No, I think I'm said pretty much everything. I am excited to see more of this high-level sci-fi. This is the type of stuff that's usually reserved for novels or weird art films like that deal with these high-level consciousness questions.
Right.
So, and along with shows a lot like The Leftovers, too, is another show that deals with these kinds of themes, I think, that is very exciting, and I hope we get season two soon. But bearing that, I hope we get a lot of Westworld and we go crazy weird places with it.
Yes.
Those are my final thoughts.
Yes, I have similar thoughts. I'm hoping for very good things out of the show. I loved season one. I'm excited to see where this goes. Supposedly, Jonathan Nolan said they had like a 5-season plan for Westworld, which is what everybody says.
Which is exciting. Oh, well, yeah, I know.
Whenever anybody has like a new TV show out, they're like, we have a 5-season arc.
I hope they actually have that, or at least this, because this has this show has the potential to get very lost, and I mean like literally like it could be like the show Lost and also get lost.
Yeah, I mean I think you know, people have compared it to Lost a lot because a lot so much of it is based on its mystery and or like the mystery surrounding it, like the twists and turns and all that it takes. And Lost has been very like, the people who made Lost have been very open about the fact that they just made that show up on the fly,
right?
Whereas Jonathan Nolan seems like he has like, you know, a plan set out for at least on a season by season basis. He seems to know where the show is going.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. If they're trying to work with this high level stuff and this many twists and things on a, we'll just make it up basis.
Like there's so many moving parts of the show. Like, any one thing goes wrong, it could derail the entire experience.
Exactly.
But for now it's working really well. And, you know, it's been a huge hit for HBO, and it's been just a very fun show for sci-fi fans to check out. So if you haven't seen Westworld, you probably should have stopped listening a while ago. but if you haven't seen Westworld, we highly recommend it. I think it's a really good show. It's available on HBO Go, or on HBO Now and HBO On Demand. If you have HBO, you can watch it. So, so there's that. So Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's Crease Show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. I almost said the complete works, and I can see you laughing at me in the Skype call. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks when many Bothans will die to bring us a new review of Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Oh my god, maybe we'll finally know what a Bothan is.
I think we know. If you go into the expanded universe canon, I'm sure. I'm sure Bothans are plentiful in Star Wars.
There's probably a whole 10-book series about them.
Of course, that quote is actually misattributed, because that quote is from Return of the Jedi. So the Bothans actually brought them the plans for Death Star 2.
What?
Yeah. It
changes everything.
Changes your entire perception, just like Westworld. And you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're going to be talking Nicolas Cage's role in the 1998 romantic fantasy drama City of Angels, where Nicolas Cage plays an angel who falls in love with a human. I'm expecting it to not be good. but we'll find out. I'm going to keep an open mind.
That's right.
We'll see what happens. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and we are out.